You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, all right. Welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We are going to have a great conversation today with Christopher Voss. Christopher is a former FBI negotiator, and he is the author of a great book on negotiation and communication. We're going to talk about that and really understanding human conversation, and he might call it negotiation, but I just call it a relationship. So we're going to be talking about that today and spending a little time with Christopher Voss. So, Chris, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405.
Thank you. It's cool. I spent some time on a 405 occasionally myself, so I can relate.
That's right. So the Pilgrim on the 405 got to run up and down just taking a look and finding out what's going on. It's a lot of fun. So tell us, Chris, a little bit about how you got to writing this wonderful book.
I was FBI hostage negotiator, became the FBI's lead international kidnapping negotiator. And actually, really early on in my career, I thought, you know, this stuff is just, it's just about human interaction, and why should it simply be confined to terrorists and bad guys? You know, why shouldn't good people who try to collaborate make it work for them also? If I can get a terrorist or a criminal to collaborate with me and enjoy doing it my way, you know, maybe I could get the people in my life to do that too. So as I progressed my way through the career, I kept applying it, you know, to business and personal life. And then finally, when I was working on trying to take what we learned to the next level, I went up to Harvard Law School's negotiation program, went through their class. And my colleagues at Harvard said, hey, you're doing the same thing we're doing. You're just doing it with different stakes, but it's the same ideas. It's the same goals. You know, start crossing over. And that was back in 2004, and started really seriously adapting it to business and personal life. And came out with the book just short of 2 years ago now.
Well, one of the things that I find really very interesting when you're talking about negotiation is for the last 18 years, I've been working with Sandler sales training. And so in terms of helping people sell, what we've had to explain to them is there's no secrets. You can't hide what you believe or what you're feeling or what you're saying. You can't use words to distract people. They're going to know. So talk to us a little bit about what you've discovered about human communication.
Yeah, well, you know, like it or not, it's emotional intelligence. Hostage negotiation is emotional intelligence on steroids. I mean, we never tried to pretend that the people that we were dealing with were rational, which unfortunately we're trying to pretend that in the real world. But in fact, everything we do is based on how our emotions filter it. You know, the limbic system, if you will, in the brain is like the respiratory system. It's never off. It's what we used to refer to as our unconscious. And our conscious is active when we're asleep. And our unconscious filters and influences all our decision-making. It's a limbic system. So as hostage negotiators, we said, all right, here's what emotions do to people, and here's how you can steer them, and here's how you steer those emotions. And so we just drop it into the human interaction. And yeah, it's about great, effective collaboration with people across the board.
Well, so talk to me a little bit about this whole notion of the limbic system. We do a lot of talking about the amygdala and that kind of always looking around to find out where the danger is.
Right. Yeah, the amygdala is pretty much the heart of the limbic system. I mean, there's some other parts in there in the brain that neuroscientists have identified, the hippocampus, and I don't know who thought that name up, you know, but I think the scientists, they like multi-syllable words that the rest of us have trouble pronouncing. But, you know, every thought that goes through our head is run through our limbic system. It's like our respiratory system. And, you know, I love the analogy personally to the respiratory system because, you know, I'll ask anybody, can you control your emotions? And they'll go, like, yeah. And I'll say, can you control your breathing? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, all right, stop breathing for an hour. And that's typically the amount of control you have over your emotions. Momentary, but then it kicks back into gear. And then what's the design? You mentioned the amygdala a little bit ago. You know, they're always looking for danger. the caveman brain. The cavemen that survived were the ones that were overly pessimistic. You know, when they saw a new creature, they'd said, you know, the last time we saw a new creature, it ate us. Maybe we better run from this. I mean, that was necessary for survival. Unfortunately, now in a civilized society, we still have this overly negative attitude, which distorts reality and makes us more negative than the world should let us be. I mean, and this is so true. Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky invented something called prospect theory. They won the Nobel Prize for it, which is basically fear of loss, and our reaction to loss is distorted. It's an outsized distortion. It's not the only impact on our thinking, but it's just the biggest. And Kahneman and Tversky said, you know, loss stings twice as much as an equivalent gain. If I give you $5, you'll only feel, okay, that's fine. If I take $5 out of your pocket, you're going to be mad. You're going to be really upset. We're still talking about $5. You can take those ideas and put them straight into business and then begin to understand how relationships deteriorate, specifically over compromise, because we never feel like we got a fair deal when we compromise. Never.
So what? Tell us about the title of your book, Never Split the Difference.
Yeah, Never Split the Difference. I started in negotiation with the premise that I couldn't give in and the other side had to be happy when I was done, because the crazy thing is hostage negotiators have repeat customers. So we can't lie and our reputation precedes us. I mean, that sounds nuts, but if you take hostages and live, what you've learned is you can take hostages and live. You're going to go to jail. You're going to do it again. So we can't lie to people. We have to have somebody that we've gotten everything we wanted from. We've had no alternatives to the negotiation. The idea of Batten is insane. I don't need Batten. The best alternative to negotiated agreement. And I need the other side to be happy with me. And so I put that into business negotiation. And then I don't compromise. Because if I can't, you know, what am I going to do as a hostage negotiator? You know, I can't give you a van, but I'll give you a motorcycle. And give me 2 of the 4 hostages and we'll call it even. You can take the motorcycle, drive it to Jersey. Tell you what, I'll pay you your tolls. I mean, it's insane. You can't compromise. What happens with the outsized distortion of loss? If I give in on a business deal to you, let's say I give you in on an item that's worth $10,000. Well, I'm going to feel like I lost $20,000 at least. Now, you only will have gotten $10,000, so you figure you only owe me $10 in return. But I'm going to want to stick you for $20 on something else. Now that's going to continue to double, and that's why it becomes a vicious cycle. That's why bad negotiation is where everybody's unhappy. People that I teach how to negotiate, the counterparts want to continue to do business, not because they're unhappy, but because they made a great deal.
So what constitutes a great deal when you have you're coming at it separate in the beginning?
Well, by definition, you're going to be hiding stuff from me that you think's important. I'm going to be hiding stuff from you that I think's important. I got to get you to trust me enough to reveal those cards so that I can find out how that overlap, where's an unexpected outcome that neither one of us would have predicted. It's really about getting the other side to drop their cards, because you're going to have something you think's not important that I'm going to say, holy cow, you could do that? Wow, yeah, that's a game changer for me. That's why we call ourselves the Black Swan Group. We're talking about discovering game changers. And they're always there. They're always there by definition, because you're hiding stuff, I'm hiding stuff. So let's figure out how we can not take each other hostage or not allow ourselves to get taken hostage. And then show our cards.
So what does it take for people to begin to show their cards?
Well, the really thing is we're going to capitalize on human nature. Like, I know that if I'm deferential to you, you're going to feel powerful and you're going to feel a lot more comfortable about talking about things that you might not otherwise say. And then I'm going to make inadvertent observations. A hostage negotiator's job is to get my counterpart to blurt something out but they didn't even realize what they were saying until after it was out there. And then, for me not to go, aha, gotcha. Instead, I react in a way that makes you happy that you said that. And I'll say something like, wow, seems like it was really difficult for you to share that with me. Seems like that was really important to you. Now, what I just said was ridiculously innocuous. Those statements seems like is actually, if you will, a calibrated phrase designed to get you thinking and get you to blurt some more stuff out, as opposed to me saying, what made you do that? Now, that's not a bad question. There's something about the way questions are designed that trigger our defense mechanisms. Our defense mechanisms go up. One of the people we've coached in real estate, as a matter of fact, the phrase that I just used, we refer to as labels, and they're meant to be deceptive in their design, because they'll get right past the thinking part of your brain and trigger the reacting part. This client has referred to those as tools that unlock the floodgates of truth telling. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Well, all right. So what you're really looking for when you talk about blurting out is you're really talking about sharing truth.
Yeah, sharing truth. And then also, if I get you talking, you might not even realize it's important. You may have just said it innocuously. Some of the most important things are the really innocuous stuff. And it is sharing truth. So it's both.
Well, and I'm willing to share innocuous stuff if my amygdala is not firing left and right, if I'm not don't have a lot of defenses up, right?
Exactly. And you just start talking. Like in hostage negotiation, we had a phrase, what's it going to take to get the bad guy to surrender? He's going to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to know he's telling us.
Right. Well, in sales, the person who is buying will tell you how to sell them, right?
If you're listening, exactly right. If you're listening strategically,
yeah,
and if you're applying some basic human nature approaches.
Yeah, and so discovering that the answer to how can I sell this to this person is not something I'm going to sit back and figure out in my private room. It's something he's going to tell me.
He's going to tell you, and all you got to do is come up with a short, simple little game plan in advance on how to get him to tell you, which is principally, you know, just the application of the Covey principle. Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, seek first to understand, then be understood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we look at that and we say to ourselves, okay, I understand.
Oh,
so now
right.
I can start to understand, you know, but it's more complicated than
right.
It's actually, you got to show understanding. And that's a slight tweak in the application.
Well, one of the things that we tell people here is that everyone in the world, the most important thing that they're all looking for is everyone's looking to be heard and understood. And if they believe that we are hearing them and understanding them, we've given them the biggest gift that's possible. How many times in the last week can you count someone who has actually heard you and understood you? Not many.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. And so we're all desperate for it, right?
Yes. And to me, that is the key to helping someone be willing to what you call blurt out. They're really allowing themselves to have some unmediated conversation.
Exactly. The floodgates of truth telling, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because ultimately, it's not a matter of selling somebody something. It's a matter of finding out if they have a problem that they want to solve. And isn't that what you do in negotiation? You're looking for the problem that the way that the hostage taker sees their problem and how they see the solution.
And it's emotion based. It's not, you know, they're looking for something larger. I mean, we call this looking for their religion. But I mean, it's ridiculous what you can get people to do if you just change. Like, you know, this is going to cause you to be an immortal. one of my favorites, Ted Leonsis, owner of the Washington Capitals, Washington Wizards. Phenomenal negotiator. He talks about being an owner in sports. He says, I want to create the immortal moments in sports that people would tell their grandchildren about. He talks about that all the time. Now, what's the point in the negotiation? The point is that when athletes hear that, he doesn't say, I want to pay you a lot of money. He says, I want to make you an immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, ooh, I like that. Now, anybody that follows sports, you know that Leonsis does not have holdouts on his teams. He doesn't have athletes holding out. They don't have disputes. He pays his guys well,
mm-hmm.
but nobody's holding him hostage over refusing to play. He does it time after time. The other thing that he does is he's one of the few owners in professional sports that actually owns his own business, owns his building, turns a profit, and has a great relationship with the city. How many professional sports teams have uprooted themselves from their cities because they couldn't get along
right.
with the city fathers? It's kind of a cliche, isn't it? How many cities have the Rams been in?
Right, right, right. And here they come back to L.A. with their tail between their legs, huh?
How many places have they been? How many places have the Raiders been? How many the Chargers just moved again.
Right.
And they're abandoning fans as a result. So that doesn't happen to guys like Ted Leonsis. He's a great owner. He understands how to create moments and create vision with what he says.
All right, so isn't that what you are doing as a negotiator? Is you are helping that hostage taker to articulate the vision?
Yeah, and then change his actions so that he still gets to where he wants to go.
Yeah, it's all about where he wants to go, and that's what I found fascinating is to think that hostage taker is just like everybody else. They have something they want,
and it's what they want is emotional. Though that's the point. They value stuff based on their emotions.
Well, how can you want something and not be emotional?
Right. Well, I mean, somebody will say terrorist is going to say, "Look, I want all the Russians out of Chechnya." What he really wants is to feel free. That's an illusion.
Uh huh.
And he wants to be a hero.
Uh huh.
If a terrorist says, I want all the Russians out of Chechnya, what they're really looking for, they're looking for their own version of immortality. You can get them to get that feeling without getting Russians out of Chechnya.
Hmm.
That's what's changing. Bank robbers says, I want a jet, $1 million. I want to fly to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about that is what this guy really wants is to live.
Right.
All the rest of that stuff are details.
In that case, is he getting the how ahead of the what?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, probably. I mean, you're saying he's saying, I want $1 million and I want a jet to Cuba. That,
right.
to me, is a how I'm going to get something.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing from you is what he really wants is he wants to live.
Deep down in his bones, yeah.
And he's
find out what they want deep down in
the
bones.
He is thinking that this particular plan, $1 million and a jet to Cuba, is going to allow him to live. And if you can get down to the place that he really wants, then you might be able to help him. But you're not going to be able to help him get $1 million and fly in a jet to Cuba.
Right. He's not getting that. He's gonna walk out that door. He's gonna ask for me by name. He's not gonna get anything, and he's gonna be happy to do it.
Well, he's gonna get his life.
Exactly.
But it's digging down to find out what they really want down at the bottom. That is, I agree with you, it's an emotional experience.
Right. What's the emotional victory?
Right.
And as you pointed out before, the vast majority of us, the biggest emotional victory is to be understood. That's insane. But if somebody feels understood in a business deal, they'll probably give in on the terms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the important piece. Now, When we are training salespeople here, or if I'm training managers who are hiring folks or managing folks, what I want them to do is I want them to begin and in the middle and in the end always be asking about, conscious of, aware of what people want.
Right. Yeah.
Because
and you can be forearmed with some of it because you know human nature.
Yes. But until that other person shares with me what they want and that becomes reciprocal, then there's no real motivation. We can't make somebody do something other than for the moment that I'm standing over there looking over their shoulder. But finding out what they really want, then helping them get what they want, that to me is highly motivated.
Agree.
And to me, that's how we create that employee base that's very loyal to us, that's going to be highly productive. We find something that they really want. Well, Chris, can you stick around for a little bit more? I want to talk about how specifically how this fits into the business world.
Absolutely. You got me hostage.
All right. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hi, time for another tip from the Sandler Sales Institute. Prospects want your information and expertise. Prospects have been trained by the vast majority of salespeople to feel entitled to your valuable information. Most salespeople are comfortable in coughing up their expertise for free. However, when the orders don't come and the prospect has shopped your information to your competitor, the salesperson has fallen victim to unpaid consulting. Before giving information, ask good questions. What does the prospect want? What is the urgency? What are the consequences of not buying anything? What is the decision-making process? Eliminate unpaid consulting. This has been another Sandler Sales Institute tip.
Welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we're having this very powerful conversation with Chris Voss, former FBI hostage-taking negotiator and the author of, I'll let you tell us, Chris. You tell us the name of your book.
Never Split the Difference.
Never Split the Difference.
Dependent on it.
It's always fun to hear an author talk about his own book.
Well, and my book's a result of a team effort, so I got a great team.
Well, tell us about your team.
Well, recognized co-author, Tal Raz, one of the best business book writer on the planet. Tal is an author of, read it. He's brilliant. He's ridiculously brilliant. Now, the uncredited co-author, and for all intents and purposes, my son Brandon, he was there the entire time. He sat down with Tal and I the first time. Tal pumped Brandon and I for information, and Brandon was absolutely instrumental in helping us get the book out. I had some other people that contributed to my thinking, a lot of other people at all. But really, the three people most responsible for the book is myself, my son Brandon, and Tal.
Right. Well, talk to me a little bit now about one of the things that we talked about, the limbic system. And I think one of the things that people are really fascinated with is this whole idea of neural mirroring and this whole notion of mirror neurons. So tell us how that has influenced the way that you work with people.
Well, for me, it sounds like there's two different topics there. So let me hit mirrors to start with, because that's one of our negotiation tactics, you know. And a hostage negotiator's mirror is not your everyday mirror. You know, most people think of mirroring in body language terms, when people get really close together and they get in sync and their physical movements begin to mirror one another. You know, you find yourself, one person leans in and puts his hand on his chin, and if you're really connected, the other person does it too. Well, a hostage negotiator's mirror is not that. What a hostage negotiator mirror is just a repetition of 1 to 3 words, usually the last 3 words. And it triggers a response, and it's a Jedi mind trick. I mean, it triggers an unconscious response in the other person where they actually change how they're saying things and they add to it. It's actually better than asking someone, what did you mean by that? If they say, look, we want to work as hard as we can, and then we want to execute when we're done. And if I were to mirror, I would say, when we're done, And the person would say, yeah, well, you know, after we sign the agreement, we've got a lot of implementation we have to work out. I mean, they're gonna reword and add to that. So that's our mirror skill. Now, the other topic I think that you, and which is really important, is the mirror neurons in somebody's head, which is an unconscious emotional response. If I smile at someone, I hit their mirror neurons in their brain, and their mirror neurons have no choice but they smile back. That's why when you smile at someone, they smile back. It's not because they like you, they do, but it's actually an unconscious response. I actually kind of love, when we're teaching negotiation, picking out someone that's got a frown plastered on their face, and I'll smile at that person, and I'll see them work visibly really hard to not smile back, because they're fighting it inside, which proves that it's an unconscious response.
Mm-hmm.
So we can trigger, I can trigger your emotions through your mirror neurons with my tone of voice. I can have a happy tone of voice, and you're going to feel uplifted, or I can use the late night FM DJ, and your brain will slow down. There's nothing you can do about it. And that's me hitting your mirror neurons and being the first mover, and then sort of holding the upper hand on it.
Well, what I often tell people is that with regard to their emotions, that it's almost like there is that, you know, that line underneath the newscaster, that script, the crawl script. That's right there. I mean, people are going to be able to read your emotions and probably what you're believing, what you're feeling when you walk in the room. So I, you know, I'm with you. Let's get it on the table. If we got a bomb, let's blow it up now, right? Let's talk about the issues.
Yeah, and so many people don't realize, I mean, that scroll is gone with your tone of voice. It's huge.
Yeah.
If I say to you, that was a really insightful observation, you feel like I appreciated it. If I were to say, that was a really insightful observation, my tone of voice is telling you that I think you're a dope.
Right.
And that it's such a betrayal of what's going on in the scroll that you just talked about. And people so often just lose control of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's when you talk a little bit about losing control, because I'm not convinced that people actually can control what other people are picking up.
Can I control what you're picking up? I'm an integrity-based negotiator,
mm-hmm.
and everybody that we teach. We believe that as a hostage negotiator, we're integrity-based. Business negotiations, we're integrity-based.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose if I don't know that I can control it, you pick that up. But if that's my default operating mode, that's what you're going to pick up. And I want you to pick that up.
Right, right. I'm with you. Yeah. If I come into a sales meeting and I am trying to get you to buy, that's my intent. You're going to know that.
Yeah, you're gonna feel pressured. You're gonna feel coerced.
I'm protecting my billfold here.
ABC. I'm always closing. I'm always closing, you sense it, and you're
right.
And you sense you got to get back.
Right. So what I train people to do is, I mean, forget selling. That's not what this is about. This is about finding out if this person has a problem that they want to solve. That, by the way, I can help them with. And that's a whole different process, because now we're in a mutual conversation about, help me to understand what the problem is. Why did you invite me in?
Well, and it's not if, because if they're talking to you, they do.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a matter of uncovering it.
Yes. But that's what it is, not trying to get you to do something that I want you to do.
Exactly.
And that goes way back to the beginning of our conversation, in that what you're doing in hostage negotiation is helping people to articulate what they really want.
Yeah, as long as you're not talking about in an instrumental way, what they want emotionally, what they want, you know, what they want. I want all the Chechens out of Russia, or all the Russians out of Chechnya.
Well, I'm wondering if that instrumental want is because I'm really not in touch with what I really want.
Well, who is?
Well, but isn't that our job to help them get in touch with it?
Yeah. Or yeah.
Right.
You know, the elements of it. I mean, we're looking to make them see it in a new way.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're making them. I think we're inviting them. We're facilitating them to get in touch with that, what is really driving them. But because they're not, you know, they're not in touch with that, they've got all of these instrumental solutions that are really not going to solve the problem.
Right. Right. Yeah, so, I agree.
So now, when you talk about emotions, you talked about in the book, you talked about labeling emotions. So talk a little bit about how that affects the conversation.
Yeah, well, what we know from neuroscience now is that negative emotions drive us 3 times as hard as positive emotions, and, you know, maybe even 9 times as hard. And I know that labeling a negative diffuses it and labeling a positive reinforces it. So this is how we start to get into tactical empathy, the actual application of the neuroscience. Now, a lot of people, they would disagree with labeling negatives diffusing them, and they're going to refer to their experience. Now, the difference is their experience is not in labeling negatives, it's denying negatives.
Mm-hmm.
For me to say something of, you know, I don't want you to think I'm not listening to you, when the other side is becoming frustrated with you. Because you're selling too much.
Right.
So that's a denial. That makes things worse. It's really hard for people to understand if I do a 2-millimeter shift and I just label it and you say, I'm sure it seems like I'm not listening to you. That actually diffuses the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It takes practice because that's so counterintuitive. And we've had people just argue with us and they said, no. In the past, sometimes people are so mad at me that when I say anything, that just makes it worse. So you got to let them vent.
If you tell them that that's okay to do that, then and you've given up everything that you have. Well, that's not true. What you're really doing is facilitating the conversation.
Right.
Now, so you know, you're coming from this extreme of hostage negotiation, and then you're moving to what in business is a very significant and powerful and emotion-laden venture with negotiation itself. Would you say that most conversations in business between employees and employer are negotiations?
Well, it sounds to me like you've thought about this a lot.
Yes. Well, I read your book, and that's why I chased you down, because I want to hear from you.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're throwing me a softball here, aren't you?
Well, I want you to talk about it. I'm throwing the softball so you can hit a home run.
Well, all right. If the words I want are in your brain, you're in a negotiation. Most dangerous negotiation is the one you don't know you're in.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Not all negotiations involve money.
Yes.
All negotiations do involve time. There's time is the commodity that's in each and every negotiation. You want somebody's time in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a negotiation.
Go back to that extreme. The negotiators who believe they are in control and can make that hostage taker do something are going to fail.
Control-oriented negotiators, not only are they going to fail, but they're actually very easy to manipulate.
Uh-huh. Well, that's interesting. I'd never thought about how easy the corollary would be that business owners who try to use control are very easily manipulated.
Well, and it's because, you know, what you said earlier about people being desperate to be understood.
Right.
So the control-oriented negotiator is desperate to feel in control.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they feel in control, they drop their guard.
That's interesting, because one of the things that we do in talking with salespeople is we ask them to use a system that will allow the buyer to feel like they're in control, but because the salesperson is using a system, they are in control.
Yeah, and you know, we like the phrase upper hand. I mean, we say the secret to gaining control and the secret to getting the upper hand in a negotiation is giving the other side the illusion of control.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think Zig Ziglar said, you can get anything you want in the world if you help enough people get what they want.
I'm sure he did. Zig Ziglar was one of the classic all-time sales advisors, right?
That's right. Well, it really comes back to my job is to help people get what they want.
Right.
And that's pretty powerful. I mean, I can imagine that you initially there was a lot of controversy and a lot of reluctance to let Chris go in to negotiate because he's just going to let them have what they want.
Actually, no. You mean in business or in hostage cases?
Yeah. Well, either one.
No, they knew I knew what I was doing. I mean, what, you know, I get.
What, did you know what you're doing the first time you did it?
I did.
You say you did or you didn't?
Yeah, no, I did. Actually, the first real hostage negotiation I got involved in was a bank robbery with hostages. Mm-hmm. Talk about it in the book. That was the first real hostage negotiation, although I'd been volunteering on a suicide hotline for about a year and a half up to that point. Mm-hmm. Actually, more like 2 years. And when I got trained as a hostage negotiator, and they're playing tapes of hostage negotiations, I remember saying to myself, I've been doing this for a year. I just didn't have a SWAT team outside. So for my crisis intervention time, like when they put me on a phone, I was actually better than they expected. They were really more. It was a FBI NYPD joint negotiation team. Uh-huh. Lieutenant Hugh McGowan was the commander of the PD's negotiation team, and he ran the operation. And he had one of his guys on the phone for a while, and it was a stalemate. And I'd been coaching him. He just pointed to me and he said, "Take the phone." And I dropped into my suicide hotline routine because I knew it would work. About 90 minutes later, I had a bank robber surrendering to me personally outside.
That's great. That's great. Well, how can we help the business people I work with tend to be companies with 10 to 250 employees, and we're really helping that business owner. This is called the Entrepreneurial Operating System, EOS. And what we're really doing is helping that business owner move from having to do everything themselves and being overwhelmed by growth to developing a team that he can trust. And how can we help them use the things that you're talking about to accelerate that process?
Well, you know, the indirect route is the fastest route. I mean, just telling people what to do is not going to be enough because... Yeah, for whatever reason, it's just not going to hit their head, their brain just right. They're not going to get it. They're not going to comply. They're not going to feel like doing it. They're going to do a great job as soon as you've established what we refer to as trust-based influence, which is the most lasting kind of influence. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's understanding how to use mirrors, labels with the people that you're directing. And it's how to take an extra 20 seconds in your communication to save you from 20 minutes of redirection. Mm-hmm. I had a judge in a federal trial that had a great phrase, you know, how do you delay so you can save time? Mm-hmm. So you slow down your direction to the people on your team and you're not happy that they've got it till they look at you and they say, that's right. And then you've exchanged it. That's right with them. I mean, it's a matter of exchanging summaries. Mm-hmm. You get to summaries with mirrors and labels. I mean, if you slow your communication down and slow it down, add another 20 seconds, another 30 seconds, another 2 minutes max, there's usually about a 7-to-1 rate of return. You're going to save 7 times the amount of time in redirection, fixing, follow-up, hurt feelings. I mean, a real problem in business is implementation. And wasted time. And what it does is it cuts down on your wasted time.
Now, we talk about helping that senior entrepreneur learn how to do that. What would be the effect if the entire, you know, 3 to 7 members of the team plus the what we call the integrator of the company, what would be the effect if they all learned that those communication tactics?
Fewer meetings.
What's that?
Fewer meetings.
Ah.
More implementation and less talking about implementation.
Hmm.
Shorter correction times. people being much more resilient and much more willing to accept correction instead of getting bent out of shape and not hearing the correction and doing it wrong again.
Could we train 50 people in doing this in a company?
Easily, yeah. What would stop you?
Well, how would you do that? What if you know, some of my clients have 50 people, or you know, between 10 and 250. And I'm thinking, on the one hand, I'm thinking we could get the leaders together. And then I'm also thinking, well, maybe get the whole team. Well, what if we got the whole company together?
Well, you know, you start with the book.
Right.
And then you start with people in leadership positions applying the book. And when it starts to become a part of the way you communicate in the company, because it's one thing to teach somebody, and it's a second issue as to whether or not it's going to last. Now, our approach when we teach companies and individuals, we don't like one-shot opportunities. It's not going to stick. If we were to teach a company, we've got some pre-work we want people to do by the time we get in person with you. You've got some familiarity with the concepts, and we're going to build it in you, and we're going to use it in your vernacular so that it makes sense faster. But it's really an issue of leadership in an organization embracing it and then building it into their communications culture.
Is that a difficult thing for a company to go through?
Depends upon how open they are to learning. Depends upon company values. You know, something stupid, but it's ridiculously effective. We do a training with JetBlue a couple months ago. And I'm blown away at how much we enjoy the training and how fast they pick it up. And finally, I said to them, you know, working with you guys is a lot of fun. And they said, have you seen our company value statement? And I'm like, no. I said, fun is on that list. It's actually an expressed corporate value. And I know that, and I'm familiar with the EOS system. So you're talking about, what are your core values?
Yes.
Well, if one of your core values is something, is even fun, flat out, like have a good time at work. The brain science actually tells us now that you're 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind. So you're more likely to have a learning organization if the value, the corporate value of enjoying or fun or something strong to that effect is part of your stated corporate value. If it's not, we're going to have trouble getting this to stick with your people because they're not enjoying their work.
Well, all right. So what do you think? If I've got 10 to 15 clients, can we train them, some of those companies in one group? Does it have to be individual companies?
It's a broad question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we got to take a look at the company. I don't know. I'm not sure how to answer that.
So maybe this is something we talk about offline.
Probably.
Yeah. We talk about how we might approach, you know, when I've got 20 clients, which is going to be by the end of the year, there are going to be some people in there who are going to find this very, very effective as a kind of a second punch as we move through the EOS journey. Because I think this is a very powerful way of helping people to communicate and to learn that the most important thing is to hear and understand, to find out what people want in depth emotionally. And that's a major training.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what would you like to tell the audience here? What kinds of things can you give them as we finish up here? How would they get in touch with you is one question I want to get, but what would you tell them to make their business better?
Well, slow down just a little bit. I mean, if you slow down for more effective communication, your rate of return on that investment is really going to exceed by, it's going to be about a 7-to-1 rate of return. We've seen it very consistently.
7-to-1.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you talk about more effective use of your time. Like, you know, in sales, there's a great phrase. The worst thing is not that you didn't get the deal. The worst thing is that it took a long time to not get the deal.
Yeah.
And what that comes from is a lack of understanding. And how do you avoid taking a long time? You actually slow your communication down a little bit. You know, you try to actively apply the Covey rules, seek first to understand, and call it the Black Swan rules, seek first to show understanding. Mm-hmm. So you can be understood, because mm-hmm. you want to be understood. And that the fastest hack to being understood is to show understanding.
Mm-hmm. Now, this understanding is not something you're going to be able to get from the internet because of their website.
It's a starting point for understanding.
Yeah, but it's a much deeper understanding of them, right?
I would say that's, yeah.
Well, that's a lot of people spend, you know, a lot of time researching on the internet, and the reality is that there's a lot of stuff there that can be picked up by in that first 15 minutes of the conversation by really listening.
Agree, 1,000%.
Well, how can people get in touch with you if they want to talk more?
Easiest way is to subscribe to the newsletter. The newsletter is a gateway to everything we do.
Okay.
It's free, which is a good price. And it comes out once a week on Tuesdays. It's a short, digestible article. It's also the gateway to the website. The website is blackswanltd.com. But the most valuable way to start getting your negotiation skills better immediately is send a text message. Send the message FBI empathy, all one word. Don't put your spell check. Let it make it two words. Send that text of FBI empathy, all one word, to the number 22828, and it's 22828, and you get a response back that'll ask for your email address, and it'll sign you up for the newsletter. You'll be off to the races.
Great. Chris, it's wonderful. Certainly exciting and wonderful to talk with you. The book was great.
Thank you.
I listened to it. I didn't read it. I listened. And
all
that
right.
was a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
So thanks a lot for being with us. This is just one more step in that pilgrim journey up and down the 405, helping businesses in California to thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.